We're celebrating today Buddha's enlightenment. It's called Rohatsu Sesshin in our tradition. It's probably the most popular Sesshin in the Soto tradition of sitting a Sesshin for every occasion of Buddha's life, the life, birth, and the death, and the enlightenment. There are many stories about his enlightenment, which I think everyone knows. He sat under a tree for a long time and encountered Mara, the great tempter, or the kind of devil-like creature that tempted him with many different powers and delights. It's often, in thinking about his enlightenment, forgotten that he went about it for a powerful reason. And that sitting under the tree was his last-ditch effort. He made many efforts before. The reason was that he lived a very, very wonderful life. Grew up in peace and harmony, with enough of everything, in beauty. People who cared for him and loved him and protected him in every way. And it wasn't until he went out from that sheltered, protected place that he encountered sickness and old age and death. And he was horrified. I have a friend who grew up in one of the valleys of Los Angeles where they grew oranges. And he said it was a heavenly realm. That as a child he just ran freely through the orange groves. He was utterly independent, and he and all his friends had a life that was completely free and beautiful. And once he moved out and saw what the rest of the world was, he said it must have been something like what Buddha experienced. And even more so when he came back years later and saw that it was all gone. And there were just miles and miles of houses built where his little heavenly realm had been. It's about being hurt by life. It was his pain that took him away from his beautiful, heavenly, safe place. He wanted to understand what was the meaning of that. What did life mean if it ended up in such a painful and difficult way? He saw somebody sick, and he thought it was terrible. He saw somebody old hobbling along. He couldn't believe it. And then he saw, and in India you see this all the time, a dead body lying on the side of the road, wrapped up and ready to be carried away. Think, wow, what is this? So he went off into the jungle and tried practicing with the yogis, And he met several very fine teachers who promised that he would, with sufficient practice, be able to connect with Atman, connect with his own inner purity, with the great inner purity of the world and life. And what he accomplished was bliss. Those yogic practices lead to tremendous experiences of bliss. You see those pictures sometimes with the eyes rolled up. But Buddha said he had to stop that because each time he stood up from an experience like that, he was just the same. So he thought it wasn't really working and wondered if that was really the answer to his question. What is this? What does it mean? So he was a walking question mark for a long, long time, 6 years. When he finally had starved himself, there's an awful description in his own words of what he endured, allowed himself to endure in order to break through what was keeping him from making that connection. Just had to keep trying and trying, staring at the sun, lying in a ditch and letting little boys pee on him, eating one grain of rice a day. Terrible. Until he was so close to death, he decided maybe that was, he was either going to die or he was going to try something else. And so he saved his own life. Or his life saved him. It's probably closer to it. And he washed and ate something that was offered to him and then sat down. And in a way, it was a kind of giving up, which is often what happens to us. We try and try and try every which way, and it's only when we give up that something cracks open. Something becomes possible. He wasn't trying to escape. Some of those yogic practices are kind of escapism, of trying to get out of this painful realm and into some other one that's less painful, that's better, that doesn't have sorrow in it or sharp edges. He just sat down with all of it, with the weird things that his mind did. And his mind brought up all kinds of weird things. Mara itself was his mind, the dark side of his mind. We all have that. We're all ambitious and foolish and lustful, and if you sit a sesshin, it's an astonishing view. See it all. Is this me? Well, yes and no. it says in the old books that Buddha bested Mara over and over. I don't think it's a psychological thing where we are tested, our assumptions are tested, and then we figure it all out. It was a much more visceral experience. We talk about face-to-face in our practice. Face-to-face with Buddha. So Siddhartha was face-to-face with his mind and all the conditioning and the assumptions and the knowledge and the hopes and fears that he thought of as himself. And as he went through the process, he began to realize that that himself was bits and pieces. It was a little piece here and a little piece there. And he saw that he had come from a long way off. That he wasn't just all by himself, that he had come from his mother had come from her mother had come from hers, all the way back to the beginning of time. And then those beings were some kind of being, and those beings were beings, and those beings were beings. So that he himself, just in terms of the past, was just the tiniest little piece of. And then as he looked at his body, he thought, but my body itself is just bits and pieces. And already it's beginning to fall apart. And I know it will because I saw it. And that's what was so horrible. There's death in this body. There's sickness. So what is it? And as he began to experience what he knew, he began to realize that anything he thought about was not only made of bits and pieces, but would fall apart. Any single thing that he thought about was not a fixed entity. Anything we look around in this room at, not one thing in this room will stay in shape. It will all end up in the garbage heap, you could say. Including us. Amazing. So Buddha began to have this sense that if nothing is permanent, including me, something's going on. Something's happening here. Something much more than what I used to think of as myself. And the story says that he said, "Maker of the house, I see how you do it. And I won't let you do it anymore. Maker of the house of the self. And And he gazed up on the last day and saw the morning star and said, all beings are enlightened with me. So it's clear why we don't talk about enlightenment very much in Zen, except at Rohatsu. It can be so misleading. It can become a big goal, an ambitious goal for us in our practice, especially when we're hurting. And yet, Buddha's experience is what we inherit. There's one school of Buddhism that says that we wouldn't be enlightened if Buddha had not become enlightened. It's a way of saying how the mind changes. Maybe as we come from Neanderthal to Homo sapiens to where we are now in our clumsy kindergarten kind of way, that we begin to get intimations, encouraged and inspired by Buddha, Jesus. There's a collection of Dogen's little talks that he gave to his monks, and it's a big fat book that Taigen put together, and I looked up enlightenment and awakening to see what Dogen had to say. And there were three little things about awakening, nothing about enlightenment at all. And the awakening things were by the way. One was, somebody asked what is awakening, and he said, oh, it's the cypress tree, which is the classic. Cypress tree is the answer for whatever. What's important is how we live and enact this Buddha nature that we are and all things are. We can't enact it for anyone else, but we are self. Are what we're looking for. And yet, our life is just one moment after another and one day of practice after another from beginning to end. Nothing special. It takes a lot of discipline to be nothing special. It's tough. And in this culture where everyone wants to be famous and everyone wants to be the best, just to be satisfied and accept the way our life is, it's really hard. And yet that's where our satisfaction lies. Right here in the ordinary. When Buddha was at the very edge of his practice at the tree, he was challenged by Mara to his right to be doing this practice, his right to actually discover who he was and where he was. And Buddha didn't say, well, God said I could be like this. He said, the earth is my witness. And he touched the earth. He brought all that aspiration toward heaven right back down to the ground. To the moment. It's one reason I like meeting in this room. I think it's so nice that it isn't a fancy determinedly Zen kind of space. It's just a space dedicated to silence and to the practice of the light. The Quakers sit and are moved by the inner light. In one of those awakening things, Dogen said, face the light. Face the light in yourself. He said, maybe it's a candle or a firefly, but don't be afraid of it. Just turn around and face it. That's our practice. So I feel very lucky today. Here we are. We have a Rohatsu Sesshin of our very own in the Quaker Meeting House. A highway roaring on the outside. And everything going on in our minds and our bodies. And we're together. Practicing together is so extremely helpful. One body. But Buddha didn't just get enlightened and get to be a fabulous person that everybody noticed and everybody depended on and all the things that happened and become a great teacher. He had to decide what to do with what happened to him. And that's the most important part of the story. He first decided that nobody would get it. That although this thing had happened to him, he didn't think anybody else would understand it if he even tried to talk about it. And then the gods persuaded him. His higher self persuaded him or something like that. And he decided maybe he'd better go back and talk to his old friends that he'd practiced the yogic practice for a long, long time. And he did. And they immediately saw that even though they were mad at him for having abandoned them and abandoned the practice, they were very annoyed with him. And they decided they weren't even going to talk to him. But they saw how changed he was. They said, oh, what happened to you? And then he had a chance to open up and share his experience with them. And though it's strange news, really, all things are ephemeral. You and I are just part of the coming and going of the universe. Everything goes and everything comes and goes and comes and goes. Every name is just a temporary name. It doesn't really fix anything in place. Nothing is fixed. And you yourself are many, many selves. Have been and will be. The human life goes on, and life itself goes on in ways we can't even know in detail. It's too huge and too complicated. And we should change our life. And so the practice began to develop as a being with others. They went out and walked around and talked to everyone. Talked to people who were in trouble. Talked to people who were trying to figure what things were. It was a very discombobulated time. Many, many questions, many answers were going around. And they were all a part of that. Dedicated to just being with people and helping them see their lives in a way that wasn't as painful as it tends to be, as bewildering as it tends to be, as people tend to cling to their ideas and to their fixed hopes and dreams for and their fixed stories about themselves and their lives. Help them detach from that clutching mind that tries to make everything be what they want it to be. Like the woman with the baby who wanted him to bring the baby back to life. He sent her out to find someone who hadn't experienced a death in the family. And she couldn't find any house that hadn't experienced it. So she came back and began to practice. He had a long life. Wonderful long life. Kind of ignominious end that didn't really matter so much. Very sweet, really. There's a wonderful story that sounds like it's from the Lotus Sutra, though it's not. I don't know where it's from, but I'll end with this description of what happened when Buddha was born. They say that a great light filled the whole of the universe. Filled everything. Every little crack and crevice was filled up. The caves and the arroyos and everything was full of light. And there were beings in those cracks and crevices. And they looked and saw each other. And they had never realized there was anybody else in there with them. And they were amazed. To me, that is Buddha's message, if you want to call it that. That we live this way, so concerned about keeping ourselves together and sort of focused and actually we're not here all alone. We're all here together. And that light shines into every crack and crevice. So that's enough. Are there questions? Allie?
You quoted that statement from Dogen about turn around to face your light or don't turn away from your light.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me a little bit of the statement from the Bible about don't hide your light under a bushel.
Yes.
Is that somewhat the same sense of don't hide what you have,
mm-hmm.
what your inner light is? Don't know it, I guess. See it, don't hide from it.
Mm-hmm.
So that inner light is part of that great light that you were talking about at the end that shines.
Mm-hmm.
It's in there somewhere in us.
Well, you can't say that. That's what the Hindu practice says, that it's in there and it's a piece of God. And Buddha said, no, there isn't any special thing in there. It's the whole. It's all of it. We talk about it as if it were separate, but actually everything is shining already. We don't have to add anything extra to it.
Don't add anything to it, but don't get in the way of it.
Yes, they say it's like clouds going in front of the sun or something like that. But even that, it's kind of a little bit awkward, too. It's simpler than that. Sam?
So is there a good side to Mara? And there's a reason why I'm asking the question.
Absolutely. Yes, and Mara didn't go away forever from that tree experience. Mara showed up all the way through Buddha's life and bugged him. And even at the very end, he came to him at the end, a few months before he died, and Mara said, you know, it's time for you to go now. You've got to die. And Buddha said, no, I'm not ready yet. And he sort of chased him away. But then 2 months later, Mara came back, and Buddha said, okay, I'm ready. But all the way through, he was a part of the process. I mean, that's what we are.
Another thing is don't fight it so hard, although it might seem like it's the enemy.
Yeah, in a way. Yes, yes, yes. That wonderful story where Mara comes to the door and Ananda says, go away, Mara. Buddha's busy. And Buddha said, who is that? And Ananda says, it's Mara. I'm sending him away. And Buddha said, oh, invite him in. Let's have tea together.
Well, he did.
He did invite him in.
I thought it says recognize him, but don't invite them in for tea.
Oh, no, he did invite him in for tea. Absolutely. If you're having tea with that side, that's much easier than
fighting.
fighting it. Yeah.
So this is where it all comes in. I got some brownies.
I see, I see. Tricky, very tricky. Well, are you all ready for brownies? Shall we do it?